Illinois looked to equalize the pay for disabled workers, and Western Illinois University expanded a parent mentoring program. We look back at interviews we did earlier this year as we take a look at the year that was, 2025, on the Cities. Today's program brings back an interview we conducted in March regarding a plan in the Illinois legislature to increase pay for disabled workers. For years, businesses have been able to pay disabled workers less than the minimum wage. It was seen as an incentive to hire the disabled who may otherwise be unable to find work. But that all changed under the new Illinois Dignity in Pay Act that removes what was called the sub-minimum wage for the disabled in the state. We're joined by the head of the ARC of the Quad Cities, Executive Director Michael Glanz, who talked with us for this program that first aired on March 7th. Michael, thank you for joining us. First off, I appreciate you being here. Let's talk about the Dignity in Pay law. In many ways, the ARC of the Quad Cities has already trailblazed this area, so it doesn't really impact you.
No, yeah, currently Dignity in Pay, although it is a transformative law that we are very supportive of, it doesn't have many direct impacts on the ARC of the Quad Cities area because we already eliminated some minimum wage a couple years ago. And we're really proud of the work we did around doing that. We're proud of employing people at minimum wage or above in really quality jobs, and we're proud of everything we've done. But then we're very supportive of the Dignity in Pay Act and what it does to really sunset an unfair employment practice across the state of Illinois where people with disabilities were able to earn less than the minimum wage, which really then kind of sets a policy directive that people with disabilities are maybe less than or shouldn't earn the same as other people. And so we really applaud the advocacy around that. We applaud the highlighting people with disabilities and they should be making the same minimum wage as anyone else in the country or in the state of Illinois. And so we're really happy to see the Dignity in Pay Act and its passage. We actually got to go and see it signed by the governor of Illinois, that final bill, and see it signed and really see that landmark time when Illinois can phase out that practice of subminimum wage.
The real concern, of course, and you've mm-hmm. heard it, and you've had to deal with it as you transitioned over the last 2 years, is that it may reduce the number of opportunities for those with disabilities. In other words, employers, instead of having three people, might have two. Did you see that?
We did. So as we made a transition, we had to focus on quality jobs over necessarily the quantity of jobs. So we do currently, although the ARC of the Quad Cities area has maintained that about 20% of our workforce is a person with a disability, and we've been able to, in certain pockets, actually grow our employment, we did see in our traditional business enterprise, or QC Flex, that there was a decrease in employment. However, we saw really great quality outcomes in the people that were employed. They're making a lot more money. They're able to spend and buy things that they want to get. They're having much more economic impact. And then we're actually seeing that we're a model employer, that it's not just people that are necessarily served by the ARC of the Quad Cities area, but we're getting people that are maybe getting services from other organizations as well are coming to work for us because we're such a great employer in our business enterprises. So what we did see is that we did reduce the number of people that were employed, but then many of those people that were earning maybe less than a minimum wage or earning less money, it was not necessarily about the money they were earning that was making them happy, but it was the engagement and the activity of having a job and having purpose in life. And so what we've had to focus on is building purpose that's not necessarily tied to employment for everyone, or finding them community employment where they do their skills really match and they can be productive in that employment. So it's kind of a both-and approach for those people that are maybe no longer employed at the ARC of the Quad Cities area. But we found great volunteer opportunities for people. We love it. We work with a bunch of nonprofit partners in the Quad Cities area that have really welcomed our individuals so that they can find purpose and meaning in their lives, and by giving back really to the community still by volunteering. Or then we've found a number of people community jobs as well.
Well, and as we said, you've been transitioning over the last 2 years without the Dignity in Pay law being put in effect. Now that it is being put in effect and is going to be phased in statewide, have other groups across the state contacted you to find out your successes and perhaps the lessons you learned?
Yes, we have. So other agency have really reached out because we're seen as a leader that recently transitioned away from paying sub-minimum wage. And so we've been talking to different agencies across the state of Illinois. We've held open houses at our place of business, our QC Flex business enterprise, where we kind of hosted people, let them kind of tour, let them see what we've done, let them see the new box cutting machines that we've purchased, the new printing machines that we purchased, the new assembly lines that we created that all sped up productivity of people with disabilities so they can earn that higher wage. And then we continue to do things of reaching out through different conferences, presenting, kind of sharing our story across the state to ensure that really all agencies can succeed in the elimination of 14C. And then I think we've also had a unique opportunity. Part of that legislation is, and what I love about this dignity and pay and why I think it is really great transformative piece of legislation is it focused on eliminating paying sub-minimum wage, but then it also focused on creating infrastructure for those agencies to be successful. So there's grants out there to help these agencies transform their services. Would have been helpful for the ARC while we were doing it. But I think I'm very hopeful for our friends and other agencies that they can take that money and use it to transform their services. And then it's also created a lot of workforces and task forces that are really built to ensure that the outcomes that this bill intended, which is actually that we increase community competitive employment for people with disabilities, is the outcome that we see. So that we don't just see less people working, but that we actually see more people working. And those task force are looking at then what resources are needed that the state needs to provide to ensure providers and people with disabilities are successful in finding employment opportunities. Also, what system transformation initiatives need to occur. So maybe the state needs to do business a little bit differently of how it promotes people, helps promote people with disabilities as great hires for companies, how it reaches out to it through its statewide network, employs people itself, and how maybe it kind of engages with people with disabilities to become state employees as well. And then also, and just kind of really ties and makes sure the system is all working together, that when any person with a disability at kind of any stage in their life says, you know what, I want to work, I want to be a productive citizen, that they can enter and kind of get that help from anyone and be told the right information.
Of course, we're a border community, bordering Iowa. Illinois, minimum wage at $15 an hour. $7.25 is the Iowa minimum wage. What type of challenge is that, actually?
Yeah, that's a great question. It did. So right when we decided we were going to eliminate sub-minimum wage at the ARC of the Quad Cities area is really when those increases to minimum wage in Illinois started to happen, to really phase in that $15 an hour. So it made it a little bit more difficult for us on our journey to do that. But at the end of the day, I think it's been a success for us. We've continued to be able to pay that higher minimum wage. We changed it really challenged us, again, to be just way more efficient, to invest in different machinery, to invest in the production lines and things of that nature to make sure that we could pay that higher minimum wage. And then even when we're out in biz, so we live in the Quad Cities community, and we can help people, and we've helped people get jobs or community jobs on both the Iowa and the Illinois side. And I would say that rarely do we have people, when we're helping them get jobs on the Iowa side, do we have them saying, oh, I want to work for 7.25. It's they're looking for higher wages over there as well and really expecting those higher wages. And so I think it hasn't affected us too much, or that different minimum wage. Because I think that the jobs do exist even in Iowa that are paying higher than $7.25 for people with disabilities, because our people can be very productive and very good employees at a lot of different companies.
Yeah, and let's talk about that, because I mean, you have tried to reach out through the community to different businesses to point out the benefits of employing disabled people. What is your pitch to a company that's going, I'm not sure I can handle that?
Well, I think our pitch is always to figure out, so what is the need at that company? So maybe is there jobs that they're struggling to fill? Is there places where they're having constant turnover? Is there places that they can maybe pull off a piece of the job that someone doesn't like and that they don't like doing on their daily basis, but then a person with a disability could come in and do that and actually fully love that job and love what they're doing and show up every day to do it. And that's when we pitch the people with disabilities. I mean, oftentimes when we find that good match, a person with a disability may work for a company for for longer than most people work for companies these days. The turnover is much lower usually with the people that we serve and the job matches that we find. They'll stay in those jobs the 10, 20, 30, 40 years with the companies and really have loyalty to those employers that took a chance and hired them. And then they show up on a day-to-day basis. And then they get to know and sometimes are more productive than the new hire that's just learning the job. And so I think there's all sorts of benefits. And usually, you have a better workplace culture when you do focus on that inclusion and having people with disabilities as part of your workforce, because it just kind of helps it make sure that you're a company that's giving back, you're a company that values everyone.
And you were saying that it's smaller companies, even mom and pop shops, that seem to be more receptive to the prospect of hiring those that are disabled.
Yeah, I think those medium-sized businesses, those kind of smaller operations are more flexible. And so they're able to incorporate the people with disabilities or hire the people with disabilities, incorporate it into their workplace culture a little bit easier and make those little changes. So if they need to maybe just change how they share the schedule with that person to ensure that they understand when their hours are scheduled, when they get there, if they have to make little changes because of the bus schedules or something. One of the biggest barriers for the people we serve is the transportation to and from work. And so making some of those adjustments of when they need a person to make sure that that person can be successful. And that usually happens at our medium-sized businesses or those smaller businesses where they're more adaptable and flexible.
Unemployment rate is at very low levels right now. Does that make it more difficult as well, that perhaps there's not as many jobs out there?
I think it makes it a little bit more difficult when there's low unemployment because then there's a lot of people going for those jobs, and so there's just competition of when the jobs are open. We do see, but again, I think we've got great hardworking people. They just happen to have disabilities. And so I think it's about finding those right matches anywhere. And it can kind of happen in any unemployment climate. So yes, sometimes when unemployment's high or when they are, when employers are struggling to find people, and I still think even though unemployment's low, we still hear from a lot of employers that some of their frontline jobs, they can't get enough people in those jobs. They are struggling to hire, and especially those frontline jobs. And that's where a lot of our people with disabilities succeed and then can be more consistent and be a consistent hire and have longevity hire for those employers.
We are seeing a lot of talk about federal cutbacks throughout the federal government. How do you think that's going to impact those that are helping disabled citizens find valuable work?
I think it'll impact, unseen of how it's going to impact that firing, finding impactful work and finding jobs for people with disabilities. I do worry that sometimes there's been a lot of talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, and inclusion's always been a core component of the message around hiring people with disabilities, and so we kind of, the uncertainty of what some of those conversations may bring is concerning for us. We as an agency and as an employer that supports people with disabilities, we're always the thing we're the most concerned about and looking at federally is to ensure that we protect Medicaid. We really need to protect Medicaid. That's a lifeline for a lot of the people we serve and the people looking for employment. So even a lot of employable people with disabilities, they may use a wheelchair, and it's Medicaid that helps them get out of bed every morning. It's Medicaid that helps them use the restroom. It's Medicaid that helps them with getting their meals and eating. However, they can still be productive members of society and have jobs and really out in community.
Is that critically important for you to spread that message? I mean, to speak for those that can't speak for themselves in a way.
Correct. I think it's extremely important for everyone. So it's extremely important for myself. It's extremely important for the people with disabilities to be sharing messages of how important Medicaid is to them and how it really helps support them in their daily lives. So it's not just it's there when you need it. It's not just a handout, but it really helps and makes someone productive in their daily lives every day. It's that getting up, ensuring that you have the supports needed to be successful, and it all flows through Medicaid.
And once again, dignity and pay, now the law of the land in Illinois. We're seeing it in more and more states. Do you think that someday that might be a national trend?
I believe so. I think that I am very proud that Illinois was the 18th state to join elimination of sub-minimum wage across the state, and that very proud to be here in Illinois and to support that legislation, and that we are kind of continue to be a leader then. But I think we'll eventually hit that kind of tipping point with 18 and then 19 and more states, and then we'll probably see some federal action to eliminate 14C and subminimum wage. And I'd actually say this is one of those topics that has been across the nation pretty bipartisan in nature, that people kind of in all walks of life understand that there is a component of allowing someone to be paid less than minimum wage is just isn't a boost to anyone's self-confidence or a boost to anyone's self-worth when you're paying them less than the person that might be working right next to them.
That was our interview from March with the Arc of the Quad Cities Executive Director, Michael Glanz. In a moment, expanding a program that gets more parents involved in the classroom. But first, here are some events that may be perfect for you, your family, and friends, thanks to Visit Quad Cities.
Check out the things to do this week in the Quad Cities. Start your week off by trying a new hobby. These Snowstar instructors will help you out with skiing and snowboarding. Then get a cozy seat at the Figge Art Museum and enjoy live music and specialty cocktails. Then get ready for live eagle demonstrations, educational exhibits, and awesome displays during Bald Eagle Days. Next, enjoy a silent disco, listen to music, and dance all night long at the Bettendorf Public Library. Finally, Anthony Gomez, a vocalist, guitarist, songwriter, and producer, is taking the stage at the Redstone Room at Common Core. For more events like these, check out our events calendar at visitquadcities.com.
It started in Chicago, but has grown into a program that is being tested in school districts across the country. The Parent Mentor Program expanded to the Rock Island Milan School District this year after starting in Moline and East Moline. It's operated locally through Western Illinois University's Quad City campus and places volunteers in elementary classrooms to support teachers and students. In July, we talk with Sarah Benson and Teresa Andrews, who are part of the Parent Mentor Program in the cities. Sarah and Teresa, thank you so much for joining us. Sarah, let's just start. What is the basics of this program? I mean, why does it exist?
So, Parent Mentor Program, it's all about really empowering families and getting families to engage with their children's education and the whole process. It's really about building a team around our kids where school and family isn't separate. It's something that comes together to make, you know, the future brighter for our kids. And we've got to work together. It's getting, you know, the family to engage with the teachers, to engage with administration, and then just working on all those relationships in between to really just get all the way around our kids to make sure that we're giving them the best chance at a good future.
You started in Moline and East Moline, and now you're expanding this year to Rock Island?
Yes. The program has been expanding for a while. We've been here in the Quad Cities for 10 years. And every year we get a chance, we get an opportunity to add more schools and then just get involved in the community as well. So we're really excited to start, you know, including some more towns that are in the Quad Cities, you know, into this program because we work a lot in the community, you know, getting resources in and out. And so we're really excited to take what we're doing for families and take it into Rock Island and to Silvis as well.
So, Teresa, tell me about these parents that you get. You're not recruiting, are you? I mean, how do you pick the parents that are part of this mentor program?
Well, for myself, a parent has to have passion. Like, I look at the commitment. You gotta have commitment to go in these classrooms and really love what you're doing. Cause my saying is, no child left alone. None. I work with, I don't care if they don't speak English, I don't care what color they is. I want every child to have the same opportunities. Myself being born in Chicago, and I didn't have them opportunities. I want every child that I work with or any parent that I hire to have the passion to do this.
How do the teachers respond to having yet another person inside the classroom?
Actually, they loving it. They actually love it. We get great responses. So that's what we start at. We start with the teachers and the principals, and we carry on to parents.
And Sarah, I mean, what do these parents do? Because you say you have to train them.
Yes.
I mean, so they're not just standing against the wall.
Right.
Observing.
So we want to make sure, you know, when we're sending parents into the classroom, that they are going to be there as a resource. And so parents are bringing, you know, their life experience in, but also they're getting professional and personal development weekly for at least 3 hours a week. So, you know, we're giving them skills that they can take into the classroom. So whether they're working one-on-one with a student or they're working in small groups, which in elementary setting, that's usually what parent mentors are doing. They're going into the classroom, working with the teacher to, you know, either catch kids up on literacy skills or math skills. But really what kind of becomes the focus of parent mentors is social and emotional development for these kids. Is we become a safe place. Parent mentors are a safe place for these kids to connect. And then, you know, academically, we start to see that progress in these kids once they kind of make that connection with parent mentors in their classroom. And teachers are great. I mean, they become mentors to the parent mentors themselves. They're sharing skills and teaching them things and how to work with their own kids at home. It's just a really just kind of beautiful relationship that happens with parent mentors and their teachers.
Well, Teresa, you know, a lot of parents don't have the time to do this. I mean, this is a real commitment.
Well, it's actually only, we do up to eight hours in the classroom weekly, and we have workshops that we do 3 hours a week. So it's actually 11 hours. And we look for people like mothers that or grandmoms that have kids or grandkids in the district. Some like myself, I was hard on my luck and had the cut hours because I had to take care of my baby. So it helped me to go up in the school and work with teachers that he worked with.
You said no child left alone.
No, none.
What have you noticed in as you've taken part in this program? I mean, have you, some kids are in a shell and have they come out? You know, I mean, tell me a story of somebody that you think was really impacted.
Well, myself, I was impacted with, where I work out of Wilson. So I have some kids that came here from, they speak Swahili. They can't speak English. They had no chance at it. And they were just sitting in the corner.
Yeah.
So I took these kids under my wing and I helped them. And I saw the results. And they happy. They screaming. All the kids call me. They know how to say Miss A. And they say, we love you, teacher. And they love this. And it just inspires me because these are some kids that were scared coming in here. We don't know how they got here. We don't know what's going on in their life. And just for me to see that I inspire them is great for me.
And we're starting at the elementary school level, Sarah. I mean, why did you pick that area for the program to begin in?
You know, that was something that was kind of structured in from PEI is, you know, mm-hmm. they started elementary. And I think it's just kind of focusing on, you know, kids need help with those foundational skills. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that's going to stick with them, you know, for the rest of their education. And I think it's important, just like Teresa said, is, you know, we work with so many different people from different cultures and backgrounds and walks of life. And I think when kids come in and they see somebody that they can connect with and make that connection with, whether it's through language or culture or, you know, those different things, I think that's kind of what makes the difference. And those kids get more confident because they see somebody that's going to see them and relate to them in ways that other people in the building might not.
The program is coordinated through Western Illinois University.
Yes.
How does a parent that's interested in joining get involved?
So the best way to kind of get a hold of us and to follow us along is our Facebook page right now. Because, you know, we're involved with Western. They're our parent organization here. So Western, really what they do for us is they give us a lot of structure. They give us a place. We actually hold our workshops here weekly. Half the time the workshops are virtual. And so that kind of is a nice to have that option for our parents as well. But the way it happens is you reach out to one of us coordinators or organizers of the program. We meet you, we do an interview process. Once we get through the interview process, then a parent mentor goes through a background check. Depending on the school district, they all kind of have different, you know, rules and regulations. Once you get through the background check, then it's a matter of, you know, we reach out to our teachers then and we recruit teachers. And, you know, it's who would like to have a parent mentor in their classroom this year. And we really kind of rely on some of our teachers in the past to, you know, help promote the program as well, because they, you know, most of our teachers, they love this program and they see, you know, success in their kids. And so then we match the teacher to the parent mentor. You know, we go over their schedule, we get to know them, what they're passionate about. You know, it's, do you want to work with kids that have special needs? Are you interested in working with kids that are multilingual, you know, and just kind of find a good fit. And what I really like about the program too is all of us start as parent mentors. And so we've all come through the program. And so we have a really good idea of, you know, how is this match going to work? How is this going to look? Is this, you know, going to be a beneficial relationship? And then just really communicating with our teachers. Like, very consistently throughout the year. So that way, if you know a problem arises, or even good things, we love to hear when things are, you know, are going great, and we see these teachers make like lifelong bonds with parent mentors even, and it's just really great to see.
And Teresa, I mean, I keep getting back to that. These people that are taking part in this program are really special, and they really have to be dedicated in care.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna say with myself. I came in. I started at Washington Elementary, and I was working third and fourth graders, and I had two third grade classes. I had two fourth grade classes, and it's not just rewarding for the kids. It's rewarding for us. And it helps the teachers. Like, if a kid is falling behind, let me take them out in the hallway, and I help with that situation. And I've seen, because now I'm working out of Wilson, I done seen my third graders come to Wilson, and they appreciate every little time that I done took with them. Like, I can't go nowhere in Quad Cities, and I don't hear my name. Miss A! Because the kid know that I love each and every one of them the same. I'm not going to get them different situations or attitudes. I love them all the same. So we got to have more parents like that. We got to have more people that have passion, love, that really want to see these kids win.
Facebook page is what, if somebody wants to contact you?
So we are the QC Parent Mentors is our Facebook page right now. And we do have a lot of contact information on there as well. So we have an email that we use. We have a WhatsApp link there. You can send us a message on Messenger anytime. But that's really kind of the best way to get a hold of us right now.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate
thank
your time.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it. Thank you.
That's our interview in July on the 31st featuring Sarah Benson and Teresa Andrews, part of the Parent Mentor Program in the cities. Our thanks to them. And our thanks to you as we look back at the year 2025 with some of the interviews we featured on this program. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer. Thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.